You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, we've all heard the expression as rare as hen's teeth, referring to something that is so rare it's all but non-existent. In fact, the ancestors of today's birds lost their teeth about 80 million years ago, so hen's teeth are beyond just rare. They are definitely non-existent. On the other hand, there are animals which are so rare they are on the brink of extinction. Remember Lonesome George? The Pinta Island tortoise from the Galapagos Islands? Richard met him. He was one of the last of his species and he died earlier this year. It is rare indeed to observe the very last of any species pass from this earth. Other rarities of the animal kingdom include the Yangtze River dolphin, the Javan rhino and the northern hairy-nosed wombat. Actually, there's quite an extensive list if you ever want to go and do a Google search. Now, 2 years ago, a mother whale and her calf became stranded on a beach in New Zealand. They were initially identified as Gray's beaked whales, but subsequent analysis demonstrated that they were, in fact, two of the rarest animal specimens known to science. Amazingly, these whales have never been observed in the wild, and the only way we even knew of their existence was from bone fragments washed up on beaches over the past 140 years. The mother and calf were spade-toothed whales. Rochelle Constantine from the University of Auckland has been studying this remarkable find. She is on sabbatical at Lund University in Sweden at the moment, and we're delighted she's joined us from one of my favourite countries. Rochelle, it's an amazing discovery, but a real tragedy that such a rare creature should wash up dead on a beach. Do we have any idea whatsoever how many spade-toothed whales might be alive today? And are they really the rarest whale in the world?
It's certainly the whale that we know the least about. And until we can sort of find out otherwise, it's definitely the rarest whale. I think, you know, only five specimens in 140 years means that it's pretty rare.
Five specimens in 140 years? How did that happen? Well, you don't know, I suppose, but go on.
It's a very good point. New Zealand is one of those places that's a bit of a magnet for whale and dolphin stranding. So we have 35 different species of whale and dolphin and porpoise that have stranded in New Zealand, and the spade-toothed beaked whale being one of them. We maintain an archive at the University of Auckland for 20 years, and we've got over 2,000 specimens in that archive. So it gives you an idea of sort of, you know, how many we get washing up in New Zealand. So out of those, we have very few specimens that are of the spade-toothed beaked whale. So historically, there was the original sample from 1872 that washed up on a small island called Pitt Island near the Chatham Islands off the east coast of the South Island of New Zealand. And that was a lower jaw with a tooth in it. That was all it was found, and that sits in our National Museum in Wellington. And then it wasn't until 1950 that another specimen was found. It was the top skull. So that was all there was the skull. And that actually is in the museum, the McGregor Museum at the University of Auckland, where I work. And then there was another specimen in 1986 that was found, again, just a top skull on Robinson Crusoe Island off Chile. Mm-hmm. So it's a really long, you know, time apart for these bits to be found. And so it wasn't until New Year's Eve in 2010 that this mother and calf, the first intact animals that we've ever known to be seen of this species, came ashore. So, you know, it's very unusual, you know, that we've seen so few specimens, given how many specimens overall of whale and dolphin wash up on New Zealand. And so we wonder where they are.
So they must be living very deep, are they?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's one of two thoughts. One is that there aren't many of them, which there may not be. There are, you know, various whales and dolphins around the world where they live in reasonably isolated environments and they live quite, you know, happily for long periods of time with not many of them. So that may be the case. But the other option, of course, for beaked whales, which, you know, they're all deep diving, squid sucking kind of whales. They're quite, you know, wonderful animals. In fact, they spend most of their time below the surface of the water than at the top of the water. So we think that it is possible that given the massive expanse of the South Pacific Ocean, which is, you know, off to the east of New Zealand, that they're out there somewhere and that they live and die out there without ever being near land. Because between New Zealand and Chile, there's effectively no landmass, and there's certainly no major landmass. So it may be that they simply live their life in the deep open waters of the South Pacific, and it's extremely rare that they come near to land, and that's why they're not seen.
So who identified them in the first place as spade-toothed whales, and who identified this one categorically as a spade-toothed whale, if we don't see them that often, I mean?
The original identification of the species was in 1873 from that specimen found. And it was a student of Scott Baker, who's one of the co-authors on the paper, who actually linked those three historical skull specimens and using DNA, so using genetic techniques. And she was able to see that they had distinct DNA from other beaked whales and then to link these three specimens together. But the thing for us, for the samples that we worked on, in the field, they were originally misidentified as grey's beaked whales because they look very similar to grey's beaked whale, which is one that is commonly stranded in New Zealand. And so at first it didn't, raise any sort of, any eyebrows, because it wasn't an unusual stranding and certainly wasn't in an unusual location for grey's beaked whales. But it wasn't until a few months later when Kirsten Thompson, who is now a student of ours working on beaked whales, that she extracted the DNA from the sample that I gave her, and she sort of called me and she says, come and have a look at this, when she got the results back, and we were both quite stunned. It was very clearly a spade-toothed beaked whale. So the first thing we did was run the sample again just in case. Of course, it came out very clear again. And then we sent it off to Scott Baker, and he had a look at it, and then we told a few people. So yeah, it was pretty exciting.
So presumably it was called a spade-toothed whale because the first sample, which was only a tooth and a piece of a jaw, had a tooth that looked like a spade.
That's right. Yeah, we're quite simple people in New Zealand. It works quite well. Yeah, the tooth is sort of a slightly different shape to other beaked whale teeth. The males, only the males, well, typically only the males have erupted teeth. And they only have two teeth, most of them. There are some who have more. It's the joys of biology. There are always exceptions. But for the beaked whales, it's the male's teeth that are one of their diagnostic features, and they're quite different between species. And these whales, they have sort of quite a flattened, almost, spade-shaped kind of tooth with a small piece off the side of it, and that they are very clear, what it is. But the problem is that apart from that one, we've only got top skulls, which don't have teeth in them. And then in the case of these two whales that recently, that we described, one of them is a juvenile male, so his teeth haven't erupted yet, and the other one was a female. So really, we still only have that lower jaw from 1872 with the tooth in it.
I think that the spade they referred to there is not a thing you dig the potatoes with, but something that the whalers used to use when they were breaking up carcasses. It's a different kind of an implement. There's a name for it which I can't remember. But anyway, if you go back to the actual bones and then fragments of other bones, I must say it's very inventive for people back in the 19th century to realise that this was a very peculiar whale. You must have had a galaxy of different so-called whales around the place by the time you fellas came along and sorted out the DNA and brought them all together. Or were there 8 or 9 different kind of whales thought to exist, and now it's reduced to one?
Yes, well, we've got, it's one of the things with taxonomy, traditional taxonomy relies on, understanding certain characters of certain species. And you can only do that if you have enough specimens. So, it becomes kind of problematic using, traditional taxonomic methods to describe organisms. And this is where it's always helpful when you can have multiple lines of inquiry, and genetic techniques being one of them. There are many different ones being developed now. So that was, a really nice thing, is that the use of these molecular sort of ecology tools alongside traditional taxonomic methods of describing organisms and variation within the sort of structure of organisms, we're able to mix these two things together and come out with an answer that's closer to the truth. And I like that. I think one of the things I find with the public often is that they don't understand that science evolves itself. It's very rare that we know the answer to something. We're always tweaking and changing, because the more we understand about something, or the more we develop a new technique, the more we're able to understand something a little more accurately. And so that's sort of been the case here, where there were these three different specimens, one the original, the holotype that was described, and then these other two that were misidentified as other species, one, in in the one in Chile, they had sort of tentatively named the Bahamondes beaked whale. And here you come along with a new another technique, like genetics, and there you've solved the mystery, and these three specimens become one, you know, species. And I like that. I like that about science.
Rochelle, when you discovered, in fact, then that the specimen, that the piece of the sample you took was the spade whale, where was the specimen at that stage? This was obviously much later. The thing had been stranded. The thing was dead. Its calf was dead. Where were they now, and what happened to them?
So Ireland is actually one of the few countries, like New Zealand, who has, you know, a similar system where the public report stranded animals, and then measurements are taken and photographs and samples. And then what we do is they get buried pretty much usually in the location where they were found. And so in the case of these whales, that's exactly what happened. They took just a few photos and took a tissue sample and then buried the carcasses. So a few months later, when we found out what we had, Anton van Helden, who's the curator at the Museum of New Zealand, curator of marine mammals there, he went back to Opapi and he spoke with the local people, the Māori people from there, because they believe that the whales and dolphins are treasure for them. So they are a really important part of our process in New Zealand when we work on whales and dolphins. And he went back to them and said, we've got something very special buried over there on the beach. Would you mind if we exhumed the carcasses and took them back to the National Museum? And they thought about it and were really grateful they gave permission. So it wasn't a very pretty job, because it was about over a year later, because they exhumed them earlier this year. And by that time, the winds and the tides had sort of, you know, uncovered the head of the female, and that had been taken back to sea. So we just have the body of the female, but we have the entire carcass of her calf. And so that is the first whole specimen of the species. So Anton is working on tidying those bones up to put them in the museum and to have a look and see, you know, about, you know, musculature and the measurements of all the bones of that individual.
Now, the beaked whales are the world's great divers, and they live a very solitary existence, we think, way out at sea. Now, can you tell anything about the possible life of this one from its anatomy? Could you put on, take up the crystal ball and look into it and give us a few scientific-based predictions about how it will turn out when we actually find them?
I think looking at the photographs that we have and then the skulls that we have and the morphology of those, they are probably much like most of the beaked whales. So there are 21 species of beaked whale, and they're all enigmatic. We know very little about most of them. There are only a few places where you can reliably see them, off the Canary Islands, for example, off the Bahamas, there's some there. There's a few spots around the world, but most of them we don't know much about, and most of them are deep diving squid. They eat squids and mesopelagic fishes, so deep water fishes in that sort of 800 meter to 1,000 meter zone. And so when looking at the photos that we have and the information we have about the spade-toothed beaked whales, we're pretty certain that they will live a very similar life to most of those other ziphiids, you know, the beaked whales, where they'll be deep diving, probably, you know, diet of squids and fishes, and probably spending very little time at the surface. They're an unusual whale because, not just spade-toothed, but the beaked whales in general, because they're very shy, and because they like the deep waters, they're generally, you know, far offshore from most territorial waters. In New Zealand, most of the places where we see most of our strandings, it's where there are maybe deep ocean trenches nearby, and we think, you know, they move along those trenches, and then sometimes, you know, they come a little bit close to land, and if they're not well, they'll die and they'll come ashore. So, and that's why you see them in Ireland as well, because you don't have to go too far off Ireland and you've got deep water.
Do you think we know all the whales? You were saying at the beginning this is the rarest one and there's been a few bones found. Do you think there are whales out in the ocean that have never been found? Because there's much, much more ocean than there is land, and we've 3,000 miles of North America or of Australia, but there's much greater distance across the Pacific Ocean. Surely there must be species of whale there that nobody has ever seen.
Yes, well, that's, I think, one of the exciting things that this you know, work brings up. I mean, here's a mammal. I mean, the female was 5.3 metres long, so she was very... This is a big mammal. We know it has to come to the surface, which is a place at least we can inhabit in the ocean reasonably safely. And yet we didn't really know anything about this whale. We still don't. So it makes you think about, well, what is living out there in the oceans? Perhaps there are other species of beaked whale, and I'd probably take a good guess that there are, that we haven't yet discovered. There's no reason at all why not. Our planet's mostly ocean. And then it brings up, you know, for me, I think more importantly, it reminds people how little we know about the ocean as a whole. You know, how many animals are in there that don't have to come to the surface to breathe? Mm. How many, you know, large, deep-dwelling organisms exist in the ocean that we know nothing about. And I find that stuff quite fascinating because I think people really take the ocean for granted. And we see the world as planet Earth, as, you know, the part that we can safely live on. But for people like me who work on animals that spend their life in the oceans are quite a fascinating place. And so, you know, to not know really anything about an over five-metre-long whale, and here we are making this discovery, I think it bodes all sorts of exciting things in the future, and including the possibility of other species of whale that we don't know much about or anything about.
Rochelle, billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars spent exploring outer space, ignoring inner space. Isn't that right?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the space people and the marine people often have these discussions, you know. And I think both places offer enormous senses of wonder. But I do know that, you know, that our planet Earth and the oceans in it are the thing that keep us alive in the immediate sense. Of course, our atmosphere does as well. But that immediate sense of, you know, what we live on, and our food comes from the ocean, our climate is driven by the ocean. There are so many important things in the ocean that I think we need to pay a little more attention to than we do. But, you know, the thing with this whale story that, you know, that we've released is it's nice because it's got people thinking about what's in the ocean, what we could find wash up on our beach. You know, you never know what's going to be on the beach when you go for a walk, especially in New Zealand. And now that we've found these spade-toothed whales, I'm hoping that, and there's been so much interest throughout the world, I'm hoping that people will sort of pay more attention to what's going on around their coastlines and then think more about what's going on in our oceans.
Rochelle, thank you very much indeed.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thank you for your interest.
Okay, bye.
Bye.